Case of the day, Dorsey v. Astru, 12-2408. Mr. Horn.
Good morning.
Your Honors, Counsel, ladies and gentlemen, may it please the Court. All the issues raised revolve around the ALJ's assessment of RFC, the residual functional capacity of Ms. Dornseif, who was at the time of her hearing, about 53 or 54. And the heart of the matter is that the ALJ mischaracterized the report of the consultative examiner, Dr. Osei, and the key pages are at 18 and 19 of the ALJ's decision, where she says this report is essentially normal. Yet, at page 407, Dr. Osei says that there's reduced motion of the left hip. Claimant cannot fully squat. Claimant wore a leg brace. Claimant could not hop. He also noted a limp that one of the reviewers at DDS mentioned. And as we've tried to impress on the Appeals Council and the District Court and this Court, these things are abnormal and remarkable. Otherwise, Dr. Osei would not have remarked on them. The claimant testified that she was limited standing at pages 469 through 471, and the vocational expert testified that anyone as limited standing as claimant testified she was could not work above the sedentary level. That's at 489 through 491. So Table 1 in the medical vocational guidelines would have mandated allowance of the claim if her testimony had been accepted. But after mischaracterizing the observations of Dr. Osei, the ALJ took an RFC assessment that was from before Ms. Dornseif injured her leg, because there seem to have been two applications here. One prior to her leg injury, because we have evidence in the record that's from 2007. Her leg injury occurred January 2008, and it was such a severe leg break that it required surgery. There was an occluded artery as well, so it required surgery. And so the RFC assessment that the ALJ relied upon was made before this leg break and before Dr. Osei's examination. Technically, it was not even admitted into evidence, although it was available, and I did have the opportunity to try and persuade the ALJ to disregard it. That's in the final pages of the hearing transcript. But it ought not to have been accepted without an accurate assessment of what the consultative examination showed. which was these limitations in Ms. Dornsife's mobility. The rules provide that POMS DI 22510.015B2A provides that the examiner should submit a medical source statement given his specific opinions of the examinee's abilities to perform physical functions. But that didn't happen in this case. And as a result, we're without the opinion of the consultative examiner. And according to 20 Code of Federal Regulations 404.1527D1, an examiner's opinion is generally entitled to greater weight than the opinion of a non-examiner. Ms. Dornsife might be sunk here if the consultative, the reviewer who had an opportunity to look at Dr. Osi's report had said that it was essentially normal and unremarkable. But the examiner, Dr. Wadner, and the critical page is 415. He didn't say that. He just mentioned the limp and ignored the other observations of the consultative examiner. Now, I suppose one could argue that that means he thought it was normal and unremarkable. But on the other hand, it might mean that he ignored the evidence just as much as the ALJ did.
To get to your argument about the medical source statement, the regulations permit but do not require that sort of information in a consultative report.
Correct, Your Honor. But in Illinois, at the application or reconsideration levels, a medical source statement such as I provided in the Arizona material, which is a D21 Exhibit 1 or 2, and also one of these RFC assessments by Dr. Wadner, Dr. Panapinto, you never get that at the application or reconsideration levels.
As a matter of rule or just de facto?
Well, de facto. If you flip a coin and it always comes up heads, something's wrong there.
What is the record evidence about Illinois' practice in this area?
All I have is my affidavit. But I mean, it involves the review of a couple of thousand cases. I've been doing this for more than 20 years. I've never seen that. I know I'm...
Right, you are, if you want to save a minute.
I'll just say one thing. The Arizona case that we've got material from, we won that case because I persuaded the ALJ to consider the more severe limitations found by the examiner. So that the examiner's opinion is entitled to more weight than that of the non-examining reviewers. That's how important that is. Thank you.
Ms. Bentz?
May it please the Court, my name is Julie Bentz, representing the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. To turn to Mr. Horn's last argument first, there's a longstanding holding that if a claimant believes that a consultative examiner's report is deficient in some manner, they can propose interrogatories. They can ask the ALJ to provide additional evidence. If they want, if there's not an opinion and they think they need it, if it would help them, they can ask. That never happened in this case. It is also, I should add, simply wrong that you never get a consultative opinion in Illinois. I had a case that I was working on about a month after this one. There's no decision, but it's fully briefed. I presume this court could take judicial notice of it as a public record. The case is Collins v. Astru. The case appears at 12 CV 111880 from the Northern District of Illinois. The key issue is whether.
Can you read that again?
It's Collins v. Astru. It's case number 112 CV 1880, Northern District of Illinois. The medical source statement from the consultative examiner appears at pages 426 to 68 of the administrative record in that case. As we have argued, in fact, this issue is not properly before the court. It's not part of the record evidence. To the extent that you wish to look at the merits, I have provided the Social Security's, the Social Security Advisory Board's aspects of disability decision making, which is an administrative pamphlet. It is my understanding, although I don't have it in any form, that there is, in fact, only one state that routinely provides medical source opinion forms to consultative examiners at the initial and reconsideration level. And it also simply beggars belief that one state administrator in Arizona could somehow dictate policy to the commissioner. I would agree with Mr. Horn that the key issue in this case is the residual functional capacity, and mainly the issue of whether Ms. Dornsife can stand for extended periods. That cuts across the plethora of legal arguments that are raised in this case. The ALJ determined that Dornsife retained the RFC to perform a range of medium work based in large part on her assessment of what Ms. Dornsife was actually doing. Ms. Dornsife applied for disability before she injured her knee. She applied solely on the basis of her seizure disorder. The ALJ noted that Ms. Dornsife's allegations about the extent of her limitations were the same at the time she applied as they were at the time of the administrative hearing. She was doing the same part-time job at the time she applied that she was doing at the administrative hearing. Her weight was approximately the same throughout it, so it's what she was actually doing as a person of her weight at the time she applied and at the time of the administrative hearing. Essentially, the ALJ found that when Ms. Dornsife injured her knee in January of 2008, that certainly it posed impairments for a period of time, but she recovered to her pre-injury level by at least 2009, and that is the core of her decision, that she looked, for example, at Dr. Wabner's opinion, who did, in fact, look at the results of Dr. Osai's consultative examination, conclude that the claimant could, that Dornsife could perform light work with certain non-exertional limitations.
Well, you mentioned weight, but she hadn't raised that something that hampered her ability to work. I just want to make sure I have the record correct.
No, the ALJ does not mention weight, but I think that's one of the questions that counsel in his reply brief suggested, that the only way that an ALJ can indirectly factor obesity into a decision is through a medical opinion that expressly discusses obesity. That is not what the rule says. Certainly that's one way that you can indirectly factor obesity into. But the medical records here show that Ms. Dornsife's weight was fairly constant throughout this period. That she did, it was based on what she, as a marginally obese person, was actually capable of doing, not whether her obesity exacerbated it, what she actually did. And that is, under the facts of this case and given the nature of the ALJ's assessment, appropriately, indirectly factors obesity into the decision. I am not arguing that the ALJ, in fact, mentioned obesity. She did not. And similarly, the ALJ appropriately limited all of the medical opinions, including Dr. Wobner's state reviewing opinion, which was based on his assessment of Dr. Osei's opinion. All of those opinions from February through May of 2008, she discounted them because of her observations based on the testimony and on properly discounting Ms. Dornsife's testimony about the impact of her seizures, which was not only wildly internally inconsistent, but inconsistent with all of the medical evidence in the record, which said that her seizures were controlled with medication when she took it. But that the ALJ said, I'm limiting those opinions to the period immediately around the time of her injury because it shows that she recovered. Dr. Osei and Dr. Wobner's opinions were a couple weeks apart. The ALJ limited Dr. Wobner's opinions. I don't accept this about light work because the other evidence in the record showed that she recovered her full pre-injury functioning by the time of the administrative hearing. I think the question of credibility is also key here. This is a question where the ALJ thoroughly went through the record and looked at the inconsistent statements that that Ms. Dornsife made, both about her ability to stand and about her the impact of her seizures. She said, clearly testified that at her part-time job she worked up to 4 hours a day, working without a break, 6 days a week, then went home and provided elder care for her mother. The ALJ reasonably found that this was, that based on her actual activities, that she was capable of doing more than she claimed. I would also note that the difference here between, you know, Dr. Wobner's opinion regarding light work and Dr. Panapinto's opinion, that was the original RFC finding from 2007 before the knee injury. The only real difference there is the amount of lifting. And Ms. Dornsife herself testified that she had no problems with lifting, that she routinely lifted up to 30 pounds at her job, and elsewhere in the record, she stated that she had no difficulty with lifting. Again, although the vocational expert did testify that a person who was limited to a total of 4 hours standing would be limited to sedentary work, that is not necessarily correct. The case law says that when a person's ability, exertional abilities, clearly are in between a category or exceed one, you use the higher category. The ALJ could just as easily have found that she was capable of a reduced range of light work or medium work with no more than 4 hours standing. That is essentially is not a question the court needs to reach, because I believe that the ALJ reasonably made her decision on the evidence in the record. So if you have no further questions, I would respectfully ask that the court affirm the commissioner's opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pence. How much time for Mr. Horn?
1 minute.
1 minute.
Counsel is usually very helpful about getting additional evidence. I'm at a loss to reply, however, because the case she cites was the medical source statement at the hearing level or at reconsideration or at application. At the hearing level, when an ALJ sends out for an exam, the ALJ gets a medical source statement. Medical source statements, in my experience, such as I've provided examples of, or as the RFC assessments exist in the file, I've yet to see one at the application or reconsideration levels.
Was it asked for?
Rarely. It's only in the past 2 years that I've started to ask for them.
In this case, was it requested?
No.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and